We're gathered in the Josephine County Board of Commissioners Conference Room for the City and County Monthly Update. We have our mayor, our council president, and city manager, and all three commissioners present this morning, as well as many illustrious staff. And I don't know if you guys can draw or not, but I told you, never mind. So we're here to gather, and the city has brought a council commission committee decision-making guidelines form. I don't know if we're starting there or somewhere else, but
we could start there. We've got a couple of items that we wanted to bring forward. I don't know if any of you guys want to take the lead on that, or if you want me to.
So I'm sure, as you know, the council adopted this decision-making form. It's got a lot of positive feedback and a little bit of negative feedback from a very vocal minority, including the paper. We went back and had a second look at it because there were some concerns, and we changed a couple things. We took off the signature line at the bottom and made a small correction to item number 5. And as we move forward, because there are committees and commissions that share county and city residents, we thought it might be appropriate to bring this forward to you for consideration for your own adoption, since some of those committees and commissions do share both county and city residents.
Right, and appointments and membership.
Yeah.
We have, and this is adopted into not only the council handbook, but also the commission committee handbooks. And so it's one of those documents that they all receive as some, guidelines for how we operate. And although they may be a county-appointed member, those are still handbooks that go to them, and wanted to, I think, the county to take a look at this, maybe acknowledge it. On this form itself, of course, the value-based decision-making was defined by city council. You may have your own values that you defined, but from a standpoint of the consensus decision-making, that is universal when it comes to teams operating and functioning in a high-performing way.
Yeah.
Well, I'm glad to hear that all the membership of the committees get the feedback in the books, regardless of who appointed them, because I think that is how you have to work on a committee. And I think we've all worked with each other long enough to know that we don't always agree on the decisions that are made. But we, in the effort of working, knowing how that decision process goes, we move forward and we get to places. And so I think in the spirit of it is definitely something that I understand. And
I think everybody at this table understands that.
Yeah.
We do.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, we have some committees that aren't functioning at a high level right now.
Yeah.
And which is unfortunate.
And this was an attempt.
You think this addresses that?
Well, we're hoping so.
Yeah.
We're hoping so. But honestly, I think that it will reach probably 90-95%. The other small number, it may not have an impact on at all.
So even like,
well, Dan and Darren have been trying to reach me for years,
right,
and it hasn't worked. So
even Rappel, who was really, critical of number 5, was extremely complimentary of the rest of it. That was the only issue that he had, and the signature. We tweaked it so that, and then I haven't heard from him. So I guess that he's fine with it because he's not afraid to let you know how he thinks or feels.
No, and I think in number 5 it was respect, and the old word was support or something. And
support, so, then it was accept,
to respect.
Well, because when I saw the first iteration, I was pretty hesitant, especially the signature line. But this is much better, because then they're guidelines and they're not demands or something. I know it's not. I don't know what the process is for someone who continually breaks the guidelines on these committees, and hopefully there aren't too many of those to consider. But I think if you've got a committee that has perhaps just one member that's kind of poisoning the water, and the committee's not able to move on and make decisions because of some ragged bone that somebody has that they don't want to let go of, that I guess that the committee could recommend that person be removed, and then the body that oversees it would consider I mean, I hope it never comes
that's
to that.
That's what we have determined it as the possible.
As the possible process.
Yeah. Last process.
And that's for anything. It's not just for this.
Sure.
Right.
You know, the hope is that, you know, everyone gets to see this and read it, and it's like, okay, I need to look at myself in the mirror. I need to reevaluate how I behave within the group and as a team member, and adjust accordingly if I need to. Am I doing things the right way? Am I a positive contributor to the team, or am I derailing everything? And
being aggressively dysfunctional.
Yeah, and we have so many volunteers. I mean, you guys have 160 or 180, and we have our share as well at the county, and we don't want to burn out the ones that are high functioning. And
so with that's a great lead-in to this story, in that an individual that we're having a little bit of trouble with, you know, made a decision on their own to send out an email to a couple other committee members, basically asking them to either resign or not reapply because this person felt that their contribution to the team was ineffectual and they weren't doing a good job and they weren't supporting the mission of the committee. And that was, to me, way outside you know, anything that's acceptable in any way, shape, or form. It was very disturbing. And this individual who was asked to leave by this person then went back to her friends and said, here's what's going on. So then her group of friends now knows what's going on. And they're like, you can't quit. You got to stay. You can't let this person make you quit. And then those group of friends talk to their group of friends. And so then the message is, why would I ever want to serve on a committee in the city of Grants Pass? Because I can get bullied. I can get emails asking me to quit because I'm not doing a good job. I'm supposed to be here contributing, having a good time.
And I'm a volunteer.
I'm a volunteer.
Yeah, exactly. You know?
And so then people go, I will never serve. If that's what's going on, there's no way in heck I'll ever serve on a committee.
And we're trying desperately.
As you know, how hard it is to get people to volunteer and serve on committees. We don't need this.
Right.
We already have a big enough
challenge. A tide of pushback. Yeah.
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 Well, no, I can appreciate you guys addressing it. I see that you found a common push out of the RCC board where they have the same policy.
Yeah, they do.
Ironically, at the same time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, interesting.
And a little more robust than ours, actually.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. For a volunteer still.
Yep. I want to avoid item 1 through 5 being summed in one thing. I go along to get along.
Well, and
I don't think it says that, but
no, but I'm just reading it.
Number 1 says they have the opportunity to express their views and opinions.
Yes,
and that's important.
And it says, and item 4, however, because I believe that I'm heard and understood by everyone, and I am unable to move them to my position, I'm willing to respect the group. And that's it in political correctness speak, but in essence, it's I have to go along to get along. Instead of saying, but I agree. I understand exactly where you're coming from,
okay.
And I think you're absolutely right. And I can see where it happens in groups of any size.
Yeah.
So, I don't want to take away the individuality, and I think you've left enough individuality in this.
I don't either, Dan.
Statement.
And then I also hope that it gives people that are sitting on the sidelines in these committees that are afraid to speak up. Mm-hmm. This will give them the confidence to speak up.
Yeah. Like they should have the freedom.
Right.
Yeah. And it's up to the committee chairs to make sure that everybody does get a voice.
So,
and you mentioned the committee chair thing. That's important. Each year we meet with the mayor and myself, and I think sometimes the council president meets with the committee chairs, and we go over the role of a chair for all the committees and commissions. And we'll be discussing this along with all the other things to make sure that those meetings are facilitated in the best fashion and the most like fashion from committee commission to committee commission. So a public individual and a committee member can attend one meeting and it will be run and operated similarly to another meeting. So there's consistency on how the process works.
And we model those after the way the council operates them.
I think that's been a huge improvement in our process.
I think so, too.
Yeah.
I think so, too.
I think that one of the keys here is number 4, if they don't feel that they're heard and understood, they don't feel that they have to do 5, which is respect the process. And some people, and our tendency in our culture right now is the only way they feel heard or understood is if somebody agrees with them wholeheartedly.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, that doesn't mean that they weren't heard or understood. It just means that you have a different, and that may be something that has a, still has an impact here, that people say, well, I didn't feel heard or understood. No, you were heard. We understand where you're coming from. And so I think that's something we have to be careful of, because the tendency in culture right now is to demand that everybody agree with us wholeheartedly versus allowing other.
There's an individual like that on one of my committees, and they use volume when speaking to the
understanding. I don't understand that.
No.
That's right.
I've never been on your committee.
I wasn't talking about you.
I have never been on your committee. What are you doing?
And that reminds me of, I can appreciate the chair annual meeting, and we may try and institute something like that on our side to get the chairs together. But I wonder if LOC or AOC has any chair training. Sometimes we have like a chair shy. It's hard to get someone to step up to be chair, especially if it's a committee that has some strong members on it. There should be some sort of fun training for chairs. Hey, here's how to keep a meeting on track.
I
didn't either. So last year I developed one. A relatively comprehensive. It took about an hour and a half. We went through, and it went through responsibilities, chairs, how to run effective and efficient meetings.
Why don't you give that to LOC, and they can share it with everybody.
And we could.
Charge it on base fee.
Get a percentage.
Definitely be willing to provide that document to you guys if you want to have
that. That would be great.
If we're going to take it to AOC, it has to be initiated by a commissioner, because they'd never, if a city manager came up, that it wouldn't be relevant. So we probably really need to have... Will you just get it to us, and then we'll...
Yeah, look at the content.
If you want it shared beyond just our local community.
Oh, I don't care. I'll share with you what...
If it has copyright A at the bottom, AC.
No. No, it doesn't.
I think that some chairs are heavy-handed, and some are not. Some are about running meetings where everybody has a chance to be heard and get that conversation, but at its same time, keep that meeting moving. So there's, I think all of us have had the time to learn from where we first started to where we are today. We've grown in those roles as well, so we have to allow people to grow in those roles.
Well, I like you having this thing. At least puts a set of guidelines so that, you know, when somebody is a committee person, it's just... reminds them of what their role is as a committee person. And that, you know, hey, you're part of a committee. You just went from, when you walked through that door, you're no longer an individual. You are a member of a committee.
And one of the things this also does is that it gives the committee chair a framework upon which to make sure that the entire committee participates.
Stays on topic.
I'm really lucky. My two committees I have really strong chairs, and that do a really good job. Makes it really a lot easier.
Cool.
Yes, it does.
So I was just hoping you guys would like sit on this, marinate. Mm-hmm. We can circle back around next month.
If you're fine with it, we just want, you know, acknowledgement. Yeah, in theory, that piece is acceptable. Looks good, and it goes into the handbook anyhow. So
I think any crossover committees are covered.
I think the two should coincide.
Yep.
Yeah. Because it's generic enough in nature. That both county and city community, because that way, like I said, it shows first off unity or solidarity between the two organizations.
I agree.
And if you're on a county committee and a city committee, the rules are basically the same.
Right. That's what we're asking.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yes.
We'll make sure to bring that back on a list to talk to. And I'd like to get RCCs too, just so we can see what the options are. Mm-hmm. Real quick, I received a email from the city manager earlier this morning asking for the official, I just need to send a letter over to them that you were the pick for the tourism committee. I wasn't here that day. I was at another meeting. And so just want to verify that's what you guys decided, that as our economic development liaison, you'll be our tourism guy?
Yep.
Okay. I'll get you an email this afternoon.
That's great. Perfect. Thank you.
I'm glad to see the map that Rob sent over. I assume this one came from Rob. ODOT, because our 199 has been in the news a lot lately, the safety that just even engineering changes will not increase the safety, that we need more patrol. There was a big push at the legislative session this season, and I, with the Association of Oregon Counties, I'm co-chair of public safety. And so the state police had come to us advocating for support for increasing how many patrol they had on the road, mm-hmm. and yeah. trying to get that increased patrol. But we're funded in Josephine County, I think, for 16 troopers, and we're down to 10. Mm-hmm. And then with that last investigation that happened with the officer-involved shooting, there's yeah. some out on leave still. So where it was always a concern of, I better keep my foot off the pedal because I'm going to get pulled over, there's less of that. And I was going to bring up today is, how do we have a unified voice, especially with RV Act or the MPO or city and county, and inviting Cape Junction to be a part of that voice as well, of saying that with these reports coming out from ODOT that we have the most dangerous 42-mile stretch in the state, what can we do to make that safer? Does it need to be a safety corridor from 238 to the border? Does do we need to, I mean, Hayes Hill, I mean, there, another family lost a member this last weekend. There's constantly stuff going, and I know speed is a huge concern, because if you don't think there's any patrol, you take your chances of going faster.
Can I interrupt here at the moment and tell a story?
No.
Yeah, absolutely not.
Wait a minute, wait a minute. I believe I am heard and understood by everyone.
I was on a ride-along with the state police on a Saturday, and we were coming back from Cape Junction, and we had just gone past the point where the road comes into 4, and we were just over the hill, and suddenly the officer whips the car around and heads back towards Cape Junction and points to a gray-colored car up ahead and says, he's doing 107.
And he thought he could catch him? That's impressive.
He lit him up, and the driver pulled off on a side road. And it turned out to be a 17-year-old who was doing 107.
I don't know any other 17-year-olds that ever did that.
Right. I didn't have a car that would go that
fast. But the reason I bring this up, it points directly to what you're saying.
It's what I'm hearing out in Cape Junction as a constant. I mean, and obviously, we're still concerned with it. We have not been able to secure funding to have 24-hour patrol. And when you call for emergency services after the sheriff's office patrol is off duty for the night, you get state police, which means state troopers are being pulled from patrol to handle emergency life calls off of the highways. And you guys know this impact on you guys with the major crimes and the investigations and everything else. I know you're not unaware of the impacts of us not having the funding, and I'm happy to say one of the meetings I get to go to next month, we're getting a meeting with Under Secretary of the BLM, or with Department of Interior and USDA, trying to say, how do we continue to get these resources back in the counties and stuff, but somehow we need to have a unified voice that is bringing up the safety concerns. If there is engineering stuff that needs to be brought up, how do we support that? If it's patrol and troopers, how do we say, we have to address this, and I think that we have an obligation to publicly address it, and sooner than later. And I don't know what that messaging needs to be exactly, but I think the timing is right. But that being said, I don't know what you guys have in mind. We have both our public works directors here, so I'm assuming you guys have a topic in mind.
So we're here from a topic of standpoint of stormwater at the fairgrounds and standby meter, which we were going to talk about this
week. And let me tag into that before we move into that. Okay. Do you want to talk about the highway?
Yeah, and I put that on there because we talked about with Art Anderson the possibility of that alternative A. There's portions of alternative A that which is still on the books in some places. Yes. That we could, in order to get this third lane, the commuter lane, slip lane, or whatever it is, that maybe we want to take alternative A out, brush it off a little bit, take out the parts that we've already addressed with Allen Creek and Redwood Avenue and all the switchbacks and all that. Is there any part of alternative A that we would like to bring forward? And the slip lanes would be one of those, which then it's already on the book somewhere. and that it wouldn't be a brand new project 15 years from now. Well, Rob brought us this, and those I thought those were cars, and they're not. They're centered. They're the striping. So that third lane is in on all of our alternative A already. Yeah. So that means that it is something that I think we could revitalize, and we kind of put our input as to what we would like that to look like. And I think that's something that we really need to lean on, and it's already there. That's the only reason I asked Mr. Brandis to do that. I got the full length of it to here. All of those are up there. And there are some things we want to do and some things we don't want to do, but we'll make sure we get this. Everybody, those are all different pages. They all go together in a big long.
Oh, I see.
Okay. You know, kind of like,
oh, I see.
We team like, together.
Kind of, you know, kind of like Allen Creek Road, we'll just make it bigger until it fits the whole wall in the city council.
So we're not looking for the big loop-de-loop. That was the original part, as we've addressed.
This one here, we had it going around into here as the entrance to the fairgrounds on this. That can't happen because it cuts right across what is now the racetrack. So there are some things that can happen. So, but we were just looking at, is that third lane part of alternative A? And it is. Mm-hmm. So I think that's where we really need to focus our attention on that part.
You bet.
Okay?
That's
the only reason. Mr. Brandis, did you have anything further to say on that?
Well, I think for a jump off, we're going this way. We definitely want to talk to ODOT to have them remodel with the Redwood Avenue intersection redone. I don't know if that's happened, because their initial take is going to be this alternative A was a package deal. It only works if all of it was implemented. There's some truth to that. I can't sit here and say how much, but you know, the third lane would die out as a trap lane out of Dowell. This also left width to have two left turn lanes both direction on Ringette. And I know putting this in would change the sidewalk in front of the fair. So there's some hiccups that wouldn't necessarily work. So, I mean, first step to me seems to be let's have ODOT remodel this to see what happens.
Okay, I'd like to see. I don't need, in my mind, just watching the flow of traffic, because I'm there all the time, and I'm let's see what it lays. I don't want number five. But I think that slip lane only needs to go to Redwood Avenue at this point in time, not all the way to Dowell, because that's quite expensive.
Right.
And there's no turnoffs after from Allen Creek Road to Dowell. There's no turnoffs, so there's really no reason for that. The traffic turnoff at Dowell is already spread out by that time. But if you watch and you go out Redwood Avenue in the afternoon, almost 40% of the cars cut off at Redwood Avenue. Yeah. And when I came into town yesterday from Albertsons, I watched in my mirror, and everybody was trying to scrunch over.
Yep.
And I said, I'll just wait to get over to the right-hand lane after the turnoff. And about 60% of the cars in broad daylight turned and went under the underpass. So those are the two things. I think it's just about from where from probably Cartwright's meet, inbound, and to Redwood Avenue, outbound. And that's about all we really need to look at right now to make that project smaller, instead of ODOT saying, well, we'll go all the way to Dowell.
So that could be. What I'm saying is we can give them all the anecdotal stories we want. ODOT's going to say, we're not dropping $6 million on it, what everybody thinks, based on what we see driving. So, again, I don't know what it takes them to push a button and remodel this. Okay. I don't think it's probably that heavy of a lift, but to me, that's the next.
Well, I brought that up, that this could be something they would like that they could possibly tie it to get it done sooner.
Could we draft a letter that would be both the city and the county? Asking for this to be brought out of the mothballs and looked at and whatever wording Rob did. And I don't know who should we volunteer to write the letter. since we have two public works directors,
It may not even be that level. I mean, for all I know, maybe they can push a button and walk off and it just happens.
Well, and I would recommend that let's get the draft and then we can get it before the council and the commission to say, yes, we approve you guys writing that letter and we can both sign and... You know, the mayor and I or whatever can say on behalf of our elected bodies, we ask that this go.
Exactly.
And then
I think basically when both of us are together and basically on the same page, it's going to carry a little more weight.
That we need this. This is something the city and county both need.
Well, and it's totally the low-hanging fruit for ODOT in our county.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, clearly that's the next place where everybody complains about the traffic out there. And it changes the way you order your day sometimes. It's like 5:30, I'm not going out there.
No, exactly.
No, so it's our big one.
It's definitely, at certain times of the day, a failed... it's more than an intersection.
Maybe print that out on red paper or something so it really stands out over at
Chairman.
ODOT.
with, Stripes. Red stripes. Danger, danger.
So again, and to be the devil's advocate, we all, I would suggest, need to then agree with their findings. If their modeling comes back and says it's a 4% improvement, we're not spending $6 million, I think we have to live with that. We can't say, well, what about? I mean, we'll keep the dialogue going, but at some level, we have to accept engineering findings. I think we all, I mean, I don't say we have to, but that's my strong suggestion, that they're not going to go with our gut feeling. So
sure,
we need to be ready to give a credence to them modeling
what,
this thing.
What can we do to help? Is there anything that we can offer in the services that we provide in the county or the city that would be a partnership that would say, we're willing to do this part to help, or we're willing to do this part? Is there anything we can offer?
Which I think we did with the Allen Creek realignment. But again, if they model it and it shows that there's only a 5% improvement, I don't think we could come to them and say, we'll pay for 80% of the project. It doesn't make it a good project.
No.
So originally they were saving 30 seconds worth of traffic back in the day.
Yeah.
What was that percentage?
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah,
exactly. They were going to
they
have a $20 million project over 30 seconds of travel time.
From
I
South
think
Wyoming,
that's
about
something
Dow Road.
To, if it was in seconds is what they were looking before, then we can, let's look at what that would be now.
Yeah, you can model all that stuff. You can say 30 seconds per car times 30,000 vehicles a day times 365 days a year times an average, what's a person's time with you. You can run those out, and it'll pay off eventually. But
well, do we have any input as to how they collect their data? In other words, put the rubber tubes across right before Redwood Avenue and one on Redwood Avenue to see how many cars out of 8,000 cars that go through there, 3,462 of them take Redwood Avenue.
Right.
Or are they just going to do, well, we have traffic counts up, but we don't know what takes off there. And because it's pretty hard to set over, pretty easy to set over in White City and not go out there and watch the traffic. But if you're out there watching the traffic and you say, yeah, it feels good to us, but we're the ones driving it. They're not.
No, if they're going to model it, my assumption would be they're going to put tubes where they need to be put tubes. I don't think we would be in a position to say, that's not right, move that tube 200 feet down. But if they're going to model it, they're going to put two.
Do we have the ability to put tubes across there right away? Probably not.
I don't know that. I don't know why we would, frankly, though. I mean, they've got dedicated traffic engineers. That is what they do. And for us to presume that we do a better place to put tubes, I'd be a little leery to do that.
I won't say it because we're being recorded, but I don't have a whole bunch of faith in some of the times traffic engineers, some of their ideas that they come up with are really kind of, they look at the ways not to do something, and you and I have talked about this before. Instead of saying, let's look at a way that we can get something done, they look at all the excuses why it can't get done.
Sure.
And I don't like that. I'm not wired that way, and I won't be wired that way, and I won't be number 5 on that list when it comes down to that.
Right. I think we trust to say, look, we're going to put a tube 300 feet before Redwood Avenue and 400 feet after. We have a pretty good idea of how many cars took off onto Redwood Avenue. We can then debate to say, hey, that seems a little bit low because there was nothing going on that weekend. It's a little high because there was a BMX event.
Well,
but
I'm confident enough in the findings that they're going to have to say,
yeah,
let's do that. Let them run the study on it, see what it comes up with, and if they say, well, it's only 2%, I'm going to probably throw a rag on that one.
Rob, could you get that? How soon could you have that letter done?
Shoot that off. You get along really good with Art.
And maybe get it to me, and I'll get it over. We'll get it scheduled up. So.
You can throw the tubes out there, and that's great. And you get, like, empirical data that shows, like, a percentage, as Rob's saying. But then there's a part that you can't measure, and that is how it affects the driver's emotional and mental state.
Yeah.
People that drive that back and forth every day, they have to drive it.
And they're frustrated. And they're wondering, when are you going to do something?
Right, they're on edge. And then people get aggressive, and they drive differently.
Road rage.
And we bring up the 199 studies that came out this week from ODOT, that it is the number one most dangerous 42-mile stretch in the state.
And if all it does is bring down everybody, makes everyone feel better and makes them calm, then that's a win.
Yes.
There's a safety aspect of it as well, absolutely.
Well, I appreciate that being a topic. You know, you have things that come up, you see it in the news, and you got to wait for that next meeting so you can bring it up and have the talk. And and that this was our next meeting to even bring it up is appropriate, that it's all of our agencies. And I know that Cave Junction, I mean, every week I'm getting emails from Cave Junction saying, what can you guys do to help us? And so it's a start.
Do you happen to know how much, or if there's any data about how many of those accidents between those two points are as a result of impaired driving from intoxicants?
I don't have the impaired. I hear that mostly it's speed, but often both are hand in hand.
Are you talking that or all the way? All to the
ODOT
way
has the study. ODOT just did it. I bet they have the details.
There's Tyler, I've got a GIS that I can forge. It's pretty sweet. You can zoom in on any on all crashes. You can filter by whatever. It's more than you probably want.
Okay. Can I have that too?
Yeah.
All of us.
Yeah.
That sounds valuable.
I always brought up the rumble strip between the lines, between the lanes. And I went out the other day to go to Cave Junction. They've got a lot of that rumble
strip. Quite a bit of it.
Quite a bit of it, yeah. I was kind of surprised. When I started noticing it, I realized they've got quite a bit of that done out there.
Well, look at I-5, though, coming into Canyonville. They put those strips across the road to try to get people to slow down a little bit. Because in between those walls coming into Cave Junction, or Canyonville, it is easy for the car just to coast faster. And right. Not saying that I've experienced that, but
well, and maybe it's not a city county thing, but Rob, we've got to also get some kind of push for now that you've got the data. Can you guys start focusing on where the crash sites are and change a few places first, maybe in phase one, and then move on to other spots? But they really should be addressing that. And for me, again, kind of a county thing. Should we talk to the sheriff's office about having either a traffic team or a focus patrol or a, like they do a intense sidewalk pedestrian thing here in town? Can we do an intense thing where there's an awareness brought up or, you know, park an empty car a couple places along there or something?
That one, that old thing when I come down into past O'Brien there, just past that.
Yep.
That gets me every time.
I know, and it's like a 50s.
I'm coming down a gear or two, and I go, yep. I'm going to fall for that again. It's only been 38 years.
Gold Beach has the same thing, and I fall for it every time they park one there.
Yeah.
And so I think there's a way to do some things from the sheriff's office side that means we're responding to that.
I think it's a reminder.
Being the most dangerous corridor.
I parked the sheriff's car in Phyllis Ray's yard out there on New Hope, and it slowed everybody down. Had a transmission out, and we was waiting to be repaired at Public Works, so I had Lonnie haul it out there, put it in the yard. We're good.
I love it.
Thank you, guys. So we'll lead into fairgrounds. I know that this is good timing, especially with some leases that we've recently signed and the impacts and all that kind of stuff. So remind me what they were. It was stormwater
and fire standby.
Okay.
And so we've got Jason and Joe here to talk about that and answer any questions you may have. I think Jason's got a map. Maybe we can start with you, Jason.
Want to start with fire standby?
Start with fire
standby. And we can throw the map up there if you like, or back behind you, whatever would be easiest.
Whatever's easiest for you guys.
So I know you had some questions with regards to fire standby and some of the buildings out there and stuff, so.
Let's steal a pin from the bottom, just for fun.
Oh, not right there. Just kidding.
Don't put a hole in there.
Can you move it?
Anywhere in that area there.
You're making me crazy.
Oh, sorry. That's a nice map.
It's slamming.
Off that big printer.
Yeah. So I know fire standby, you guys did have questions, and I believe that all of the buildings in this back portion are covered by 3 meters. Does that sound right? 3 standby meters?
I don't know. It's your game. You're in the courthouse now. This is your show.
Absolutely. And Joe can speak to whether or not those could be removed. I know that was one of the initial questions that did come forward to us. And I think the short answer is...
So...
Yes is the right answer. No. There was a question about the change of usage from originally where they were going to go and why they were there to what actually ended up being where the buildings were used as. Could it now be different because it's not going to meet that purpose originally? But, Dan, you can...
Kind of an evaluation of all of those. If those, every one of those has a standby meter in it?
They don't.
Okay. I think I would have liked to see where are the standby meters and then an evaluation of whether or not it's really purposeful.
Right. Whether the building
requires
it. It's
always been there and you've got it.
So when the building was constructed, it was required or at least installed.
Right, right.
So to change that, what you'd have to go through is a change of use through the building official and say we no longer think the building is this use, it's this use instead.
There's a process for that?
Yes. And basically determined off of that is, well, I have to have a fire sprinkler or I don't have to. It's based on square footage, buildings that are close to each other, construction styles. There's a whole bunch that goes into it, so it's not an easy answer, and it's going to require hiring an architect or engineer to do that and say, here's why I think that it doesn't need to have a fire sprinkler, and we need to change the use to this other use.
So if there are no, if they're the pole barns with cattle in them or metal siding and dirt floors and no people except when they're feeding their animals, that doesn't weigh in necessarily. It still has to do with the overall.
It has to do with how close the buildings are to each other in a lot of cases. Building code says that you have to be X number of feet between building and building, and without that, you basically do it. Sprinkler laws are driven off of two things, life safety, and it's also driven off an industry standard, which comes from insurance companies, because they don't want to pay a loss for the loss of the building. We are heavy on the public side of it, of wanting to save people. So there's two separate aspects when we look at. And a lot of fire sprinklers in commercial applications are not driven by loss of life. They're driven by the insurance companies having a vetted interest in it and not wanting to have a loss. So if we take one of those buildings and we remove the sprinkler system, we say it's okay, we don't have to have that. The other aspect you have to understand is the code's very clear. You have to remove the sprinkler system. There can't be an assumption that the sprinkler system is still there.
If they're there, they got to work.
Yeah, right. So they either have to work or they have to be removed from the building. Mm-hmm. As far as the standby meters go, if you did something like a master meter or, you know, try to combine some of those, that's another possibility. The aspect of that is you're going to have to rehydraulically design those. So we need to make sure that the water supply to those sprinkler systems is adequate to make them function. So that would be the other aspect of combining or something. Yeah.
If we can't go through the engineering and we're going to go all through this and it's not going to be this and everything else, there is one more thing that y'all could do, and you could do it in-house, is why do you charge so much for standby water on something that probably is never used? It's like me buying life insurance. I'm betting I'm going to die, and my insurance company's betting I'm going to live forever. How dumb is that? Because I'm not going to get anything out of it after I die. Somebody else is, but I'm paying for it. But when you get to a standby thing, and you're saying, okay, we've got a 4-inch pipe going in that building, and your standby water is $1,600 a month because you have a 4-inch pipe, because we told you you had to have a 4-inch pipe, and it's $1,600, and we've never used it, and it's $1,600 a month or a year for the last 72 years. That's excessive to me for standby water. Now, if I've got a building that I'm using every day, like Fire Mountain Gems, for instance. Oh, you bet. They've got a 12-inch, they're one of our biggest standby customers, and a 12 or 14-inch pipe, and been a drop of water go through that since that building's been in, but they've paid through the nose for it. And I'm saying we've got buildings out there that are nowhere, anywhere near the loss of life, loss of anything, and yet there is no adjustment at all. It's still at the break-it-off level for standby. And I think that's something you can do administratively that doesn't cost us anything. We're a government entity. We're a publicly owned entity. Josephine County citizens have to pay for that standby water. And I think as the fairgrounds, there should be something different. Yes, ma'am.
I would say that I don't know if that will get an excuse because the city of Grants Pass is the biggest water payer of the city of Grants Pass water.
Well, I get
so
that.
As far as the government getting a break, they pay the biggest bill in their area. But I do agree with when you have barns with metal next to each other with no structure inside, what is the sprinkler saving? And even if it's next to another barn with metal walls, there's nothing interior to put the fire out of, but it's required to have sprinkler. And at $1,600 apiece, when there's no infrastructure whatsoever inside, there's dirt floors and removable stalls that are metal. I think that's part of why they said, can it be reevaluated? If it's just looking at there's a building 10 feet from a building, but when you got a dirt floor barn with nothing inside and no walls, what is a sprinkler system even protecting?
Right, but I don't know if it's wood posts that are holding up the metal structure.
And I can't speak to that. What I will say is we did restructure the standby fees this year, and all of them were lowered. Probably as much as you would like.
I was going to say, we lowered them 2 cents.
What
a great job. Check the box, we lowered standby water fees.
You're welcome, Dan. You're welcome. Yeah, yeah.
See, they heard you.
We did.
I mean, I was the one that fought for that big time. Mm-hmm. Big time.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah. But it's still hard to do because You're talking about a what if.
You're paying for potential use of that capacity. Mm-hmm.
I did it.
And I just put this on here this morning because I was worried about it. But I'm sorry I did not come prepared with what we actually do pay. Because I'm having her look up right now to see if
I thought three standby meters.
If she can get us the bill, and we'll itemize it here to find out exactly how much the county pays the city. And I get it, Commissioner Morty, you're absolutely right. The city is the biggest customer, but it's like saying, my wife is the biggest drain on my wallet. But what is it? She's buying food to feed me at the end of the day. So the city said, we're our own biggest customer. Oh, yeah, you're moving it from this pocket into this pocket, and it still stays in the
family. Actually, parks
where
pays
we
probably
don't.
The biggest watering the grass for the citizens. That's probably the biggest
probably so.
But it's paying for a service, too. It's
I play Jeopardy at the fair every year, and I...
Yeah. Hey, I missed three. I got a T-shirt. I did pretty good.
Do you know if all your meters are the same size?
They aren't. A standby meter goes by what size
pipe. I know, that's what I'm asking. Give me the array of your standby meters.
That's what I mean. I apologize for not having everything here. I should have all that.
Okay.
Yeah. If we can even get that information.
Well, if I had known this was going to be here, I would have asked Tamara to be here today as well, because she could speak to it better than our fair director.
I just wanted to bring it up because it's something that I don't think we should just let it go.
Yeah.
It needs to be something that we're looking at ways that we can cut back on our utilities at the fairgrounds, and we're looking at everything. And of course, this thing with this contract, everything that has to do with fairgrounds is underneath the microscope right now. And I won't apologize for that because we have to continue on.
But we also have an opportunity with our new horse racing partner. They're going to change some infrastructure things, power, water wise, because they'll have different demands.
Yeah,
and they'll have to. They'll
have
so maybe we'll have a chance to
standby demand.
Combine some of those meters to get one charge, and change that a little bit.
And I believe that several of your meters serve multiple buildings. They're not just serving one meter per building.
Yeah.
Looking
at that map, OSU Extension, you got Public Works, you got Transit.
I don't think Public Works any of these are all of these buildings back in this area in here. Yeah.
So those are our horse barns.
It might even be the...
Or our horse stalls and then barns.
Yeah, there's the main standby meter that comes in the back of the Public Works entrance that feeds the buildings all on the map to your to right over here. And then the other standby meter feeds the buildings on the left side. I don't know where the third one is.
Yeah. So Public Works doesn't have any standby meter on it?
It's not a sprinkled building. Mm-hmm.
Where all the people are?
We have a standby meter in a pole horse barn with nothing in it, and we have a mechanic shop across the fence with solvents and oil and everything, and we don't have fire suppression.
We have hydrants. I don't know if that changes it.
Huh?
We have hydrants.
And I think it had to do with gathering.
It's the use of the building, what it's intended for, and that's what's going to drive the codes. I mean, it's very clear the Oregon Structural Specialty Code, when it's required, when it's not, depending on those. Like I say, you can research what those are. But that's where it's based off of. It's also, like I say, based off of total square footage. It's also based off of construction and how close you are to another building. So a decision was made in the process that said, okay, we want to build our building this way. This is what we have to do it.
Okay.
So there's other options that were out there during construction, maybe. There's lots of different ways. That's why you can't just come in and say, oh, we'll do this and we'll take the sprinkler system away from it. Because it's so many different aspects of how that was applied by an architect or engineer. And submitted to the approval process.
Yeah. Okay, well, I think I would like to review it.
And I outlawed on-site combustion at Public Works, so that's the other thing.
What's that?
I outlawed on-site combustion at Public Works.
Well, that's perfect, yeah. You know what, we are in a process of our master plan for the whole fair, and it's under the urban renewal, if that's the right or wrong language, with the new lease. The whole property is going to be reevaluated over the next 20 years, the potential of what it is today to then. So I would say that let's be aware of where it is, but I think the fact that it's going to change as significantly as it is, I don't know how much we want to invest into that project if it's going to be changing anyhow towards a potential event center, multi-use. What if lodging went in there? What if other businesses went in there? Who knows what we dream? And the process of looking at this master plan and all that kind of stuff. So,
you probably would spend more on the evaluating and whatnot, then the savings would be if you...
Potentially not. If they're 4-inch meters, they could...
What I'm talking about is with everything that's going on...
The whole package.
Yeah.
Hmm? So I know the other question was related to impervious surface and stormwater fees. The map shows all of the areas that are counted as impervious on the fairgrounds. So there is a very, very large amount of impervious surface. I will also tell you that when this construction all completes, the entire infield will then likely be counted as impervious because of all of the soccer fields being added. They drain directly to pipes, which then enter into our
system. Water doesn't go through the soccer field and into the ground?
No. It goes through the soccer field and into a drainage system and connects into the storm drain system.
Is it all, what's it got, a membrane underneath it?
Yeah,
or something?
There's an impervious membrane and a collector system underneath of it.
Okay.
Yeah. So the way that the charges were calculated is we flew the entire city. We came up with the average size of a single-family residential house and how much impervious surface area that they added to the system. That became a unit of one, and that's 3,700 square feet. That we then looked at, one of the things that council wrestled with was whether or not government was included or excluded. As you recall, like the transportation utility, government was excluded from that utility. However, government has some of the largest impervious surface areas, schools,
ironically,
city, county. It was kind of decided that it didn't make sense to exclude them when they are some of the primary contributors.
It has to all go towards the plan. I understand that. I just also want us to, we don't all have equal access to revenue when this function isn't tax-based. You know, so it may be government, but not tax-based. So that's kind of what we're looking at is those programs that are self-funded, self-supporting.
Is there opportunity for us to put a retention pond and get off the storm side of it all?
No, but you could put in some retention and get a reduction of roughly 40% of the bill.
That would be interesting.
The other thing
might be
something
to look at.
I know, how many pipes do you think hit the river from, or hit your storm drain system from us? Off the fairgrounds.
I can't actually answer that, you know, because we don't know what all of your on-site private infrastructure is.
Either do we.
Most places don't. Stormwater is that utility that's been ignored by most utilities. The other thing, we've offered credits to the school districts because they will teach curriculum that's related to stormwater.
Can we have a seminar then?
Well, that might be, if you guys are holding workshops or something, there might be an opportunity. Council would have to evaluate that, whether we include some additional...
I'm always going to be supportive of anything that has to do with reduction of fire standby. So, just FYI.
Right. We have an instant ally.
Yeah. So, anyway...
So, what do you want, a fist bump or something, huh?
Just throw that out there. You do whatever you want to do.
There we go.
That is a lot of
yellow. Let's take a look.
Is that one bill?
Yes.
And you have three of those?
Well, there's three meters, I think.
I think that's just a monthly bill. And I don't know if it shows stormwater on the
standby meter.
That's
at 1,470.
Stormwater is there, but there's no, that's not a standby.
That's not a standby bill.
No, that's just stormwater, But it is... almost the whole bill. It's 1,500 out of 1,700.
It is, but there's a lot of impervious surface area out there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We don't allow them to use water, but we're going to pick.
No, that's how I see the standby charge.
Well,
you tell me a 3/4-inch meter feeds the whole fairground?
For the one most part. There's, well, you have a 3/4 and a 1-inch.
We have both.
Then where do you get? How could you possibly with a 1-inch meter? Feed standby.
There's
that's
more services.
Standby.
This is not
that's
the only.
Okay.
Not this is
one.
Not
okay.
The
okay.
only
okay.
bill
okay.
that you get. Yeah.
Hopefully, all the stormwater's on this bill, though.
I hope so too.
So, just looking at where we are in time for our meeting, just looking at noon, it's 9 minutes away. Are there? I appreciate this information. It certainly gives us. I think the opportunities for us to continue to talk, as co-located in the city, as making that master plan is. Yeah. The urban renewal and the potential there, we got to keep having those conversations. Cool. And not sure when the right times or where we be a part of that, but I think we certainly need to be and keep, as we're making those plans, it's going to guide the next 20 years, so we want to have those plans as soon as possible.
And I don't know how to include that in the present plan that the fairgrounds is doing, But it sounds like something they really need to be aware of is the stormwater and the, the standby.
And the stuff around them is not necessarily in their plan. So the public works, the OSU, and all the parks and all that yellow that's off of Ringette is not in their master plan. So we have a bigger function than just them.
What we'll do is we'll just run all of our stormwater down to Tusink Park, and we'll build a retention pond down there for 40%. You guys can fish for perch down there. Problem solved, 40% of it. I had another thing on here was parking at the fairgrounds, because parking was a big thing that we talked about with the expansion of the fairgrounds and stuff. And I'm just going to throw this out here, it's something that I've been privy to, and I don't go to Duck games, but when they built Autzen Stadium, they didn't go to University of Oregon and say, we want parking for 80,000 people. Your requirement is parking for 80,000 people. They did not make Autzen Stadium put in a parking lot for 80,000 people. Go on a step, next step, maybe a couple notches higher, at the Indianapolis 500. They don't tell the Indianapolis 500 people that you have to provide parking, year-round parking, for 400,000 spectators for a one-shot-a-year event, two shots a year, with a brickyard. So that's something I want us to consider, because I can see the wheels turning, that parking, we're going to land it all on the promoters over there, or the people, the investors, that now we're going to get, I don't want to make them put in a five-tier parking structure, and they only use the bottom tier of it for 90% of the time. We're working at, I know, I let the record show, Commission. No, but there, you know, what they do at Indianapolis, what they do at Autzen Stadium is it is offshore parking and then a shuttle system to the facility. And those people, like the Boy Scouts, may take the parking at LDS Church or something and make money off of it that way. For the few events that they have, it's a structured shuttle system that takes into consideration the parking requirement.
Are you guys still evaluating parking citywide?
We are.
Yeah, well, it's going to be...
We're evaluating parking in the downtown area.
Downtown area? Yeah. Okay. I know that... So we had a miscommunication. We thought that we had an agreement to use the Bank of America lot for overflow parking for the fairgrounds, and that fell through a couple weeks before the fair. And both the LDS Church at Harbeck and South Middle School next door both partnered with and agreed to be our overflow parking and overflow to the overflow parking. And we had the Josephine County Transit doing a special run, and it was just nonstop between them, which actually was pretty neat if we can work out better the advertising of that. But we know that there is going to be an impact. Originally, when the YMCA was built, there was a requirement in that lease that they pave as they grow. And it's paved to here, but we've learned that that lease has now expired, that that requirement is no longer. So what has happened is this whole portion is now leased out to TMB Racing. And so not only will their HRT go here, the potential of what is the parking need, and part of our contract is that it has to be and meet the need of the facility. So I hear what you're saying, we don't want to require them to do a five structure, but when we're taking away the parking for the whole thing, it is something we have to accommodate.
It may end up being that, but I just wanted to make sure that there are other alternatives than requiring it all to be piled on, because there'll be some development up there, that this is the opportunity to do the whole thing, when there could be another way to do it, as they do it
elsewhere. Well, and the parking should just be for that Racino.
That's not what our contract says.
Right.
No,
our contract says it has to take into accommodation.
But the city's requirement will probably just be for the Racino when they apply for the building.
But there may be events that are happening here. This is the parking for the entire facility.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So it can't just be for the Racino, the requirement.
Just for the fair.
Present use.
It's already being used.
This is the current parking accommodation for all of that. Mm-hmm. So for
so
it to go away...
That.
But just once a year for the fair. The rest of the time, that other parking lot's available.
The Y and the Racino will not... Potentially won't fill that parking lot up every day. But during when it's going to be an issue is during fair time. Yeah. So do you say, okay...
Or other
say,
events.
Or a soccer event.
Or I mean, soccer there's soccer every weekend. Yeah. may or may not. So, and there's soccer every weekend and racing every weekend. The parking availability. So
the racing is going to be Sunday, Monday to stay away from soccer is the way I heard it.
I hear you, but people will come into town and utilize the RV or something else, and they may. I mean, they're.
I think we'll
just planning for the bigger picture of realizing that this is still the parking for the whole. There isn't another parking structure unless we offer shuttle service or something like that.
So I just want us to be realistic when we're looking at that to say that okay, we're not gonna pave and draw and landscape and everything for a 1 day a year shop.
Right.
So we have a place where everybody can park off the strip road and everybody has a little tree over there parking place and everybody has a cooling station and so on and so forth. I just want to make sure that there's alternatives.
How many racing days are there going to be?
Time.
There's two seasons.
Two seasons.
With all the seasons together, how many racing?
And what they're not looking at filling the grandstands where their money is in the fall meet. After, you know, you have too much racing, you're not going to fill those grandstands. They're not. I said, well, that is, grandstand isn't big enough, and he said, I don't even care about the grandstands because this is all on television. Yeah. It's all video. It's all. Simulcast or whatever you call it.
But
they're not worried about a gate. Like, we worry about a gate. They don't worry about a gate.
Okay.
They're not in the slightest, they're worried about a gate.
And it's like 2 or 3 months in the fall, 2 or 3 in the spring.
Yeah, the soccer, I think, would have a bigger impact on parking than that horse racing ever will have, in my mind.
Yeah. It's going to be fun.
I think the soccer is really going to have an impact, especially if we get...
Well, and you can have flag football tournaments. Oh, yeah. It's not just soccer, too. Yeah. There's
going to
be a bunch
going on.
When I
was a kid, that was high school graduation.
Graduations, weddings,
that was concerts, that was... Yeah. Okay, so we have about 2 minutes. Is there any wrap-up of anything that we need to make sure that any other pressing issues...
Or agenda builds for next time?
Cats.
Cats.
So,
got it.
I'm glad you brought it. I was going
to
bring it.
I meant to. It was on my list. So, can I have my public works director touch base with you or follow up to see what the questions are so we can try to maybe they can come to workshop and answer questions?
Fine. We've got on the agenda.
I heard it
somewhere.
Came up again, but up, yeah. If you know what some of those questions are ahead of time, that we can make sure that we have the answers. That you know are anticipating?
What are you volunteering, Rob,
this
for?
Point in time, I don't
He's know. In the room.
Did I say public works?
Yeah, you said, yeah. Can I have my public works? I didn't know he was your public works director.
Public health.
I was like, you're a wild cat guy.
Oh, yeah, sorry.
So, the animal shelter.
I got your back.
Falls under public health. Our animal control falls under sheriff. So, but anything that animal control collects goes to the shelter, and the quarantine and those issues kind of shelter. So I believe the public health director would be a better resource for you.
At this point in time, I don't have any questions. We did a comprehensive workshop with those individuals about a year ago and came to some conclusions on what could and couldn't be done or what requirements and resources are required to do something, and I don't have any new questions, so we are going to have another workshop from council. Once I get some more council direction, I may be able to have something.
I would be willing to talk with you too about some potentials based on all the animal shelter advisory committees I've attended and the topic and some of the things that came out of a year ago that they discussed afterwards that I don't know came back to you guys. And kind of just giving you an update to kind of, and then you can talk with your council on where that's going, but
okay.
You know, we found that there were some claims being made that weren't necessarily accurate. As far as you guys say you'll take one cat a day, and your website says it. Okay, let's go to the website. What does it say? Call first to make a plan. It's as space is available. It says twice on the website to call first, and that it's not that they'll take one every day. And so, but that's the accusation. So, you know, it's how do we actually make sure that the messaging is consistent and all that kind of stuff. We also, I spoke with the sheriff this week of potentially seeing about building a program with a veterinarian on a kind of county health animal officer, like we have a county health doctor, like a veterinarian, and seeing, you know, we have one that's willing to help us with some policy and decision making and trying to see. Consistently, though, the veterinarians in Grants Pass all say that the the system of putting down the cats is not something they will support. It actually causes there to be a vacuum in population, increases population for some reason and stuff like that. So, and that's a consistent messaging. I know you guys had someone who said they were a vet in LA 20 years ago and that we're doing inhumane things. We work with our veterinarians in town completely, and they're all advising in different capacity. And the information that was presented is not consistent with what we're hearing from people currently in practice and doing surgeries and different stuff. I would love to be able to put a clinic that we can be processing more, because we rely on the veterinarians in town with open slots for surgeries right now. And if we could build a clinic and do that, it would be incredible. But so far we've applied for grants for a mobile clinic, and we didn't get those grants. But since that time, there's a clinic that opened in Jackson County that's a mobile clinic. And so there has been a little bit of impact by that. I know the Churchill one, most of those animals have been rehomed and moved out of that location, so it should have taken care of that issue. But overall, finding a consistent policy and what to do, where we're still trying to do is how do we deal with the influx of the surgeries and all that could come in to deal with it all at once versus, you know, here and there. But it would be good to touch base and just kind of see if we can what hasn't been addressed, what still needs to be addressed. And we are still looking for funding mechanisms and continuing to build the program.
Okay.
Policy is maybe something the city could handle too. You have a 2-dog limit, but there's no cat limit. I have a neighbor who feeds all the cats in the neighborhood.
I think we have an animal limit, don't we?
Yep.
Yeah, we do.
Is this for a 2-dog limit?
Is this for our next meeting, or are we going to get to the end of this?
We can get there, you're right.
Yeah.
But just so you know, there's no city policy regarding cat ownership.
And but they talk about it every couple of years. There still is no policy.
You don't own a cat.
That's the problem.
Yeah.
We should start.
So the lady that lives near me that feeds all the cats in the neighborhood will claim, I only have 2 cats. I just put out food. Right. And so we collect cats, but they're not hers. So what do you do? So there are some things we can talk about.
There was a spay and neuter clinic up in her garage.
But yet the city said, told a woman recently, the last 6 months, that they had the opportunity to arrest her because she took her neighbor's next-door cat out to the animal shelter. And the reason was because that was that person's personal property. So your claim isn't accurate, that you can't own a cat. You can own a cat.
No, that's been city policy in the past, that the city policy says there's no, but that was criminal law. So that's 2 departments within the city conflicting. That's code for buildings, and that's public safety. And those are both city departments based on city policy.
And you're not going to, you can keep a dog in with a fence, you're not going to keep a cat in with a fence.
No way.
Oh, I don't know.
Yeah, that ownership of the cat, that might be your cat, but he's going to wander. I don't own a cat, and I've got numerous cats that use my front thing for a potty seat.
We can have further dialogue and then develop what we can do to offer to be helpful for your workshop.
You almost got to a voluntary register your cat last time. As a city, almost.
And the animal shelter advisory had looked into what other areas have done with that, and they are completely, it's not effective.
And it was, it was voluntary to keep that one neighbor-to-neighbor thing. My cat's registered, so yes, that's mine.
Right.
So now you have taken something of mine. That's what brought that to me.
Okay, so I'll follow up with you if that would be okay.
That's great.
All right, and we can start with that and just try to see what we can do to offer help.
Sounds good.
Anything else? Great. With 5 minutes over, because I don't know how to stop.
Oh. I was just going to make sure you guys were all invited to the Harold Haugen Memorial. Yeah.
Thursday,
September 5th at
2 p.m. at the Floral Building.
I will not be attending.
Might want to announce it to you at one of the meetings.
What time again?
Good for you. Where are you going?
2 p.m. Floral Building.
This is my brother.
Thursday, September 5th. I gave the wrong date at our last weekly business session in Williams. It was my bad.
Right.
Yeah, it is Thursday the 5th at 2 p.m.
You have the marijuana symposium thing or whatever tonight, too.
Wednesday night.
Tomorrow Wednesday. Yeah, at 6.
The hemp symposium, 6 to 7:30, Floral Building, same building.
So, a lot of players.
Putting that together.
You bet.
Good deal. That's
I think it is going to be a good deal.
It's going to be a good
awesome. You guys have a good day. We're adjourned at 12:06.